Tidbit of music that you were just listening to that started the show tonight was Choose Love by Laura Kane. She's an artist here in L.A. Well, tonight our special guest is New York Times bestselling author and former fundamentalist Christian Frank Schaeffer, who'll discuss his newest book, Sex, Mom, and God, how the Bible's strange take on sex led to crazy politics, and how I learned to love women and Jesus anyway. Yes, of course, we're going to be talking about the Dominionists, the dangers of the Tea Party candidates, Perry, Bachman, and Palin, if she ever gets into the race, and their extremist backers who are at war with the Queen of Heaven, Columbia, Lady Liberty, Amaterasu. Remember, if you can't listen at 6 o'clock, and you can always catch the show or any other show later from the archives at your convenience. And if you can't tune in live and have questions, you can always email your questions several days before the show. I appreciate your input and feedback. Comments are always welcome. You are gas in my tank, listeners. Well, we're going to jump right in tonight because Frank doesn't have the whole hour to be with us, so I'm going to save my comments and announcements for later, so I hope you'll stay tuned. But let's just jump right in. Welcome, Frank, to the show. I'm glad you're back.
Thank you so much.
Well, it's been a while since you've been on, and I have a lot of new listeners, so why don't we start with a brief intro of what your background is for those who might not know you yet, and then we'll start talking about the book, and of course I want to talk about the Dominionism and the Evangelical Party and all of that.
Sure. Well, you know, a thumbnail sketch of the book or my background is one and the same, because this is a memoir, and it is about a number of current subjects as well, the politics you've already mentioned. But briefly, I grew up in Switzerland in the 1950s and 60s as the son of American fundamentalist missionaries, who at that time, when I was a child, were very obscure, unknown American young couple who had gone over to Europe in 1947, who were raising my three sisters and me, and running a ministry called Le Brie Fellowship that at that time a few students came to what were called beatniks back in the day, who were traveling through Europe hitchhiking, would crash there, stay a few nights. And my dad and my mom's purpose in life at that point was to lead people to a saving knowledge of Jesus, which is the way they would have put it then. If you fast forward to the present, my dad, who died in 1984, is known as one of the founders of the religious right. And the way that came about is that in the 1960s, he began to write some books, became very well known in the evangelical ghetto as an intellectual who could defend Christian ideas. My mother also was writing and talking. The ministry grew. And by the time I was in my late teens, we had the future Christian leadership there on a regular basis. People like Billy Graham with his family would come through, Jerry Falwell, Pat Robertson, Dr. James Dobson, all these people who later become the leaders of the religious right were essentially followers of my father. And by the early 1970s, we began to also have connections with and personal friendships with a lot of political leaders, and this was after Roe v. Wade and the legalization of abortion. By that time, I had been groomed to sort of be my dad's nepotistic sidekick, and I was out on the road with him, often, as a matter of fact, in Jerry Falwell's borrowed jet, and we were going around the country speaking at seminars and at Christian colleges and churches and essentially beating the drum for the beginning of the anti-abortion movement and what really became the foundation of the religious right. And by that time, Dad was meeting with people like President Reagan. We were working with C. Everett Koop to make a film series called Whatever Happened to the Human Race, which was the foundation of the Protestant pro-life movement. Koop went on and became Surgeon General with Ronald Reagan. We were close friends with people like Jack Kemp, who was a congressman, and Bob Dole's running mate at one point. So my life that I talk about in Sex, Mom, and God in the book really has spanned, you know, two stories. A personal one, what it's like to grow up as the son of fundamentalist parents who then become religious right leaders. But there's a second story, because as a young person before I left the religious right, I was very much involved. For instance, directing the film series that Sarah Palin cites and Michelle Bachmann talks about. In fact, Michelle Bachmann is quoted in The New Yorker recently saying that it's the reason she got into politics, something called How Should We Then Live, that I directed and my dad wrote and I made with him. So my life has spanned the kind of story of fundamentalist Christianity in the sense that recently it's become less about religion and more about politics, and that's what happened to our family, and we played a role in that. And so that's what the book is about, but that also gives an idea of the kind of background I come from. And so when I make my critique of evangelical Protestant fundamentalism, or my critique of the religious right, or the dominionists, the so-called Reconstructionists, who have really taken over the religious right and as such have had tremendous influence in the Republican Party recently, I speak as a former insider who actually grew up with and cut his teeth on these political movements.
So, Frank, what changed your mind?
Well, I think if you look back, it's easier to see things in hindsight. And in Sex, Mom, and God, and in my memoir, Crazy for God, I've tried to unpack an answer to this, which is truthful. But I think it boils down to a number of things. First of all, three elements have come to characterize evangelical Christianity in America, aside from the right-wing tilt. One is that it is big business. It's the money. The second is that it's a series of personality cults. And the third is that it is part of the entertainment culture more than it is religion. And then when you add politics into that, I guess I got out when my dad died in 1984 because, to be honest, the prospect of spending the rest of my life as a person, a figure, a leader within this movement really kind of was something I found abhorrent and intolerable. First of all, on a level of personal taste in terms of spirituality and religion, just the big business aspect of it began to sicken me and the kind of hypocrisy it led to in my own life. And then I guess on the political front, when it began to dawn on me that the religious right might wrap itself in the flag, but actually they hated the United States of America. And when I say that, what I mean is that they would say they loved America, they want to take it back to its Christian beginnings, but as a matter of fact, in terms of America as it actually is, a country tolerant of women's rights, tolerant of gay rights, increasingly open to a multicultural kind of view of the world, where black people, white people, brown people are on an equal footing as integration gradually came about. You know, this is an America that makes the kind of Michelle Bachmann, Sarah Palin, Rick Perry types increasingly uncomfortable. And really, when they say they want to take America back either to the Bible or from these sort of other people they disagree with who are just the other with the big capital O, you know, whether that's immigrants they don't want to hear or gay people or women who have too developed a sense of their own rights as they would understand it. You know, these folks are so intolerant of those on what they consider to be the other side of the culture wars that the fact that America as a country, its government, tolerates folks who are gay or who want to have abortion rights or whatever it may be, means that the religious right really has come to hate this country. And I think that combination of just becoming kind of tired of and sickened by the personality cult, the politics, the lust for power, and the money-grubbing side of big business as it became evangelical Christianity, you know, combined, came to a real tipping point when I realized how just negatively anti-American the folks were that I was one of, working hard with to try to turn America into a quote-unquote Christian country. In other words, a kind of a theocracy. So that stuff came to a boiling point gradually, and between 1984, when my dad died, and the late 1980s, certainly by 1990, I was completely out of the movement, both religiously, rejecting the theology of the movement, as I talk about in Sex, Mom, and God, and the kind of misogyny of the movement, on one side, and I was certainly out of it politically completely by that point, and moving very far away from the religious right.
Well, I can understand that. I mean, you said a minute ago about the film series, Whatever Happened to the Human Race, and I'm thinking to myself, we can so easily apply that to them now. And, you know, in indicative of that is how the crowd responded, Ron Paul and Rick Perry when, you know, they were talking about the death penalty and leaving
right.
this guy in a coma with nobody to pay for his medical bills. You know, this sort of Ayn Rand individualist, you know, attitude that, you know, we're not our brother's keeper, even though that's what Jesus said.
Right.
I think he said. I mean, that was the
yeah,
idea
absolutely.
Of Christianity I grew up with anyway, you
yeah.
know. So Frank, I guess I'm one, you know, because we're short on time here, I want to get to the most important things, and you'd let me know when you have to go.
Sure.
But how do we defeat these people? I mean, do you think there's enough humane people in the country to rise up against them, or are they just so slick and have such a good, spin machine, and they have Fox News 24/7?
Right.
Can they be beat? How can they be beat?
Well, you know, they've gone a long way to neutering and undoing the effectiveness of the Obama presidency thus far. And I'm someone who very much supports the president, and I hope he gets a second term with a better congressional makeup so he has a chance to do something. But I think that's an example of the tremendous power of the religious right, who have taken over the Republican Party and even made business-as-usual items such as the debt ceiling impossible to negotiate.
Mm-hmm.
Because they essentially dislike the U.S. government to the point where they're trying to literally defund it. In other words, cut off taxation and all the rest. So I think it's a moot point. I don't know whether in the long term the forces of the religious right can be defeated. But I think they probably can for one reason, and that is that the religious right and the kind of people who vote that direction control the primary process when it comes to who's on various Republican tickets, but they certainly don't control the general population's opinions. There's probably about 20%, 25% of the American public is actually hard right religious conservative in this sense. It certainly doesn't even include all evangelicals. For instance, many of the younger generation of evangelicals are very open to gay rights and would part company with some of the religious right figures like a Michelle Bachmann on an issue like that, who's an absolute homophobe in her views. So I think in the long term, the religious right's going to lose. But I think to give it a perspective that is really meaningful, we've got to look beyond the American context. And I think the larger picture is this. And I think if you if one comes to understand this, it makes things clearer. I think the real story here is a worldwide phenomena of a collision between fundamentalist religions of all kinds, not just Christianity here in America, and the age of science and reason and what I guess you'd call modernity. And so you have the Saudi Arabians exporting Wahhabist conservative Islam all over the world and spending billions of dollars building madrasas where little boys are sitting repeating the Quran instead of learning math and science and biology and history, etc. You have fundamentalist Christians in America pulling their kids out of the school system, actually trying to defund it, and at the same time saying you've got to homeschool your kids so you can indoctrinate them, which is their version of the madrasas. You know, there are Hindus in India who have risen up as a nationalist force now for the first time in decades, actually murdered a number of foreigners and evangelical and Roman Catholic missionaries, something that hasn't happened for a long time in India because they're Hindu nationalists and they don't believe foreigners ought to be there. So, you know, it isn't just American evangelical right-wing Christians. It's a worldwide collision between angry, frightened fundamentalists who see their power slipping away globally because science and reason and people turning away from various Bronze Age mythologies, whether it's the misogyny in the Bible or the Quran or whatever. There's a lot of people out there who are religious who are not fundamentalists. And, of course, you know, if you look at the war that has gone on within Islam recently, where there are more Muslims being killed by other Muslims than certainly in any other context, you understand that what's happening in America is not unique. So the U.S. has a lot of evangelical Christians and other sorts of religious people who are not intolerant, right-wing nutcases, But we have a big share of our village idiots now who have taken over the Republican Party in the name of Christianity. And it's really no different than the kind of civil war between more tolerant religious Islam and other Muslims, or in Hindu India between Hindu nationalist crazy people who want to murder foreigners, and then your normal run-of-the-mill peace-loving Hindu person who just wants to get on with their life like anybody else. And I think that's the context that we see here in America, is just our Christianized version of this. And I think if you look at Rick Perry and Michelle Bachmann, Sarah Palin, and all these other people, and in fact George W. Bush before them, you have to understand these are the poster children for an evangelical fundamentalist idea called Reconstructionism or Dominionism, that says we have to take the Bible literally. We have to apply the laws of scriptures, including Old Testament laws about homosexuality or women and other things, and apply them to today, including executing women who have had abortions and whatever it may be, crazy as it may seem. But people like Gary North and Rusess Rushdoony and these other founders of the religious right on this Reconstructionist side wrote this stuff. It's really no different than, you know, what we see in the world of Islam, as you have this fight between Muslim traditionalist fundamentalists and more enlightened people. And so we're just getting caught up in a global confrontation between modernity and fundamentalism. And note, I didn't say between modernity and religion per se. There is no collision course between that. There are a lot of reasonable religious people. I'm saying between fundamentalist religion that's frightened, bigoted, and by the way, shares one attribute, whether it's Hindus or thinking that foreign people are trying to take over India, or whether it's, you know, Saudi Arabian Wahhabists exporting hatred, or American fundamentalist Christians, they all share a victimology. They're sure they're being victimized by elites. So Sarah Palin, for instance, talks about how universities are bad, how the East Coast elite is terrible, how real Americans live in the middle, et cetera, et cetera. And that's the same with all these people. So, you know, you look at what Al-Qaeda has been saying, or the Taliban, it's a sense of victimology. Poor little us, you know, downtrodden Muslim fundamentalists, you know, the West hates us, they're conspiring against us, blah, blah, blah. No different than Zionists in Israel that sound exactly like the Taliban. You know, we're being conspired against, the Palestinians want to take back the West Bank, we've got to have bigger families and stand our ground. So one thing all these fundamentalist groups share, whether it's Zionists on the West Bank, or Hindus murdering foreigners in India, or Muslims blowing up mosques in the name of Allah, or evangelicals homeschooling their kids because they distrust the U.S. government and we want to pull all our kids back and indoctrinate them, they all have a sense of victimhood, that not only are the elites wrong, but they're constantly being victimized by these elites. And, of course, when it comes to America, that's so ironic, because it's the evangelicals who have taken over the Republican Party. Not only that, in the last election, put 87 freshman Tea Party congressmen in Congress, to the point where they've literally managed to bring business to a standstill, and we're on the brink of a second dip recession. Grasp to these people's hard work to defund the government by refusing to raise taxes or on billionaires, or stop paying, you know, Exxon and BP and these other people inordinate subsidies and so forth. So we're part of a worldwide phenomena, but this sense of victimhood and anger at everybody who's not us is common to all these religious groups, and we just happen to be bitten by the same bug very badly here in America right now.
So, Frank, do you think they really believe they're victims? Because, you know, it seems to me they're not victims at all. You know, they're
the
ones that are...
It's a scam. I mean, if you look at the... Look, you know, Rupert Murdoch bought Zondervan and Harper One, which are the two big evangelical religious publishing houses. He didn't do this because he's a victim. He did it because he's a multi-billionaire with News Corp churning out this nonsense from Fox News. You know, they're not victims, but they play that role. So you talked about Fox News earlier. Look at their psychology. You know, we're the only people who tell the truth. And, you know, that's why Sarah Palin's here. And, you know, she won't be interviewed by the big, bad secular media because they're so mean to her. They ask real questions, so we'll give her her own show so she won't be victimized. So, of course, the people at the top of organizations like Fox News don't believe a word of this, but it's very good shtick. And, you know, mom and pop, no name somewhere in the middle, I think, do tend to believe it. They're out of step with science, for instance. They don't believe in global warming. It's a conspiracy by the elites. They don't believe in evolution. It's a conspiracy by the scientists to, you know, take away our Bible, take away our children. So there's this sense of being threatened and embattled by not just other people, but by facts. So you've got a whole group of people here in America who are actually frightened of facts. They don't want to know about evolution or global warming because it doesn't fit their theology. And so they've come up with this idea that to even tell them about this stuff makes them victims. So we can't have sex education in schools. Okay, we can't even have our kids in schools. We've got to homeschool them or put them in Christian schools. So this little group keeps circling the wagons and becoming a tighter and tighter, more inward-looking enclave. You know, they only get their news from Fox News or Rush Limbaugh. They will not send their kids to public schools. You know, they don't want to pay taxes. They don't want anything regulated in terms of banking or the stock market or Wall Street.
Well, about that, let me interrupt you for a second. And maybe it just goes back to the facts, issue that, you know, they're not living in reality. They're in their own little bubble. But, I mean, how could they, after what happened on Wall Street, how could they not want a Consumer Protection Bureau, you know?
Because how could they not want an EPA,
you know?
Yeah, this is where, you know, it sounds like I'm pitching my book, but literally I can just say, hey, if you read Sex, Mom, and God, your listeners will understand it, because what I talk about there is what the subtitle is, you know, Sex, Mom, and God, How the Bible's Strange Take on Sex Led to Crazy Politics. Well, look, I'll explain the steps exactly. You know, the crazy ideas of sexuality in the evangelical ghetto led to a politics of rejecting the world around us because of things like gay rights and women's rights, sexual politics. It all has to do with sex all the time. What happens? Did anything change? No, abortion's still legal. Gay rights march forward. What happened was, is you've got a vast group of people in America, this evangelical fundamentalist subculture that hate the U.S. government because they feel their morality's been betrayed on issues like abortion and gay rights. And so they vote for Republicans who pay lip service to these issues, and some who, like Sarah Palin, who perhaps actually really believe what she's saying. And the result is not that the issues they voted on change. The result is that you have people in Washington who are doing the bidding of billionaires and corporations. And to get the American middle class and lower middle class and often uneducated white vote on the basis of Exxon not paying taxes or on the basis of not cleaning up the environment would be a hard sell. So what you do is you get them to vote for you on the basis of moral litmus tests that cost you nothing. Because you just stand up and say, I'm against all abortion, or I'm against global, I don't believe in global warming, or I don't believe in evolution, or I think we should teach that America had a Christian foundation in the textbook. Let's put prayer back in public schools. You know, whatever punches their button that day.
Right.
The result is that, you know, Goldman Sachs does what they want. The Koch brothers do what they want because they've got people voting for a party that's in their hip pocket, not on the basis of the issues they care about, but on a bunch of morality and litmus test family values issues, so-called, that keeps the blue-collar, lower-middle-class, uneducated, often vote in America in their hip pocket from that group of people on issues that have to do with these so-called moral issues. But the result has nothing to do with that. The result is that the Republican Party continues to do what they have done traditionally, which is coddle the super wealthy in America, allow the gap between the wealthy and the poor to grow, allow us to be in a country where, you know, 1% of the population owns 80% of the wealth, et cetera, et cetera. You can't make that happen by a straight-up frontal attack on the lower middle classes. The only way you make this happen is if you get them to vote for your candidates on the issues that you keep pitching them are the moral litmus tests. And that's the only reason these issues continue to be such a big deal within American politics.
So if you had if you had the ear of Barack Obama, what would you tell him? How does he defeat this tide?
Well, you know, to look at it in the hindsight of his third year of presidency here, you know, I've written a lot about Barack Obama. I would sit down and I would just say something very simple to him. And I would say these people have no goodwill towards you. A lot of them are actual racists, whether you want to admit that or not. It's a psychologically tough thing for a black American president to admit that, you know, a third of the country is going to hate him irrespective of what he does or the content of his character. That's tough. But the second thing I would say is that you know, you're dealing with people who you cannot win over because they don't want to hear the facts. In fact, they consider it rude and oppressive to bring facts up. That's why they feel victimized, because these are facts that run contrary to their faith. They live faith-based, not fact-based lives. And so I really think that the best advice the president could have is you're going to have to write these folks off, stop being polite, call it exactly as it is on issues like global warming, and essentially go for the middle of the country, the broad majority of Americans who are much more reasonable, and stop trying to meet any of these people halfway. You can't triangulate the issue. The best example is the way he has been lied about. How do you find middle ground or reasonable ground between a group of people who, like the 30% of New Jersey voters who voted Republican in the last election, who stated seriously that they believe Barack Obama is the Antichrist? You know, what is the middle distance between sanity and rational thought and that? There isn't. You can't meet that halfway. So I really believe that politics in America, people, commentators, the president, whomever, have got to understand that this group of people has to be written off in the same way that you would have to write off the village idiot at a certain point who had had a complete mental breakdown. Sure, it would be nice to include him, but, you know, he's out there soiling himself and throwing bottles through windows and stinking up the joint. And you can't bring him into the town meeting because the whole thing will come to a grinding halt. And we've brought the village idiot, 87 of them, into Congress as the new Republican majority sent there by the Tea Party. These are not rational people, or if they're rational, they're serving a constituency that's so irrational they have to pretend to be as crazy as the people who voted for them. And so you have more reasonable people like Mitt Romney, for instance, who's not an insane man and probably doesn't have a real religious bone in his body, has to play footsie with these guys and pretend he agrees with them on the issues because they have such a lock on power. So I think what Barack Obama needs to stand up is say just that, that the Republican Party has been taken over by a fringe that is so far out that they literally are the national village idiots, and we cannot meet these people halfway without destroying our country, and call it like it is. And I think we're long overdue for that type of straightforward denunciation of an extreme group of people who are now actually sending candidates, like, for instance, Michelle Bachmann and Rick Perry, to run in presidential races, let alone Congress. And so, you know, right. Back in my day, as I write about in Sex, Mom, and God, you know, we were a fringe element, and we were kind of advocating from the sidelines and glad if we could get a meeting in Washington with Ronald Reagan or whoever it may be. You know, fast forward some 35 years, we're in a situation where what used to be the fringe now actually controls the Republican Party. And even more than that, the leading candidates for the presidency from the Republican Party right now, Rick Perry, Michelle Bachmann, are people who themselves would have been fringe advocates 30 years ago, and now they're actually running for office. So
right. It's
evolved into an insane
place. I've had some conversations with women particularly who for some reason, you know, they call themselves feminists, they say they care about women's rights, but they can't get the idea of, you know, they don't get the idea that Sarah Palin, Michelle Bachmann, you know, these women are dangerous.
And the hypocrisy is massive. I mean, Sarah Palin, Michelle Bachmann, we saw it a few weeks ago when Michelle Bachmann was asked point blank at this conference, in this debate, you know, would you submit to your husband in terms of the biblical principles? And she looked in the camera and told a barefaced lie. You know, back in 2006, she says, yes, not only would she submit, she hadn't wanted to get a law degree, nor had she wanted to run for Congress, but she submits to her husband, obeys him in all things, she said, and he had told her to run and go to law school and then run for Congress, and that's why she did. Well, now
yeah.
She's running for president. She says, no, submission just means we're kind of good friends and respect each other. Well, her constituency know that's a barefaced lie because she's been part of a conservative evangelical movement in which there's an actual submission movement led by people like Nancy Lee DeMoss, who's the daughter of one of the richest funders of the far right in America, Nancy DeMoss, and the DeMoss Foundation actually started Newt Gingrich's PAC for him. And they used to fund stuff that I did back in the 70s and 80s with my parents. These folks, to them, the code word of submission means literally you know, barefoot and pregnant in the kitchen. I mean, it's not a joke. These are guys who believe in homeschooling daughters to keep them out of public schools so they'll never be able to date anybody, that they'll marry someone that their father helps them choose. They might as well be Saudi Arabians, literally,
right,
in the way they're raising their daughter. And she knew that perfectly well. And she said she's part of that submission movement earlier, and now, of course, has to drop it as she looks at a mainstream American electorate who wouldn't go for this. But, you know, these are not joke issues for women. It goes way past simply abortion rights and gets into the actual role of women within the family and whether husbands, for instance, can beat their wives with impunity, whether a woman has to always be sexually available or it's her fault if her husband commits adultery, et cetera, et cetera. These are issues that are preached. In fact, in Sex, Mom, and God, I have a whole section on the Quiverful movement, which believes that women should have all the babies they biologically can bear. In other words, no birth control, believes women should submit to their husbands. And these are huge movements within evangelicalism that the mainstream media never, never, never covers.
And why do you think that is?
Because I think, A, they're embarrassed, B, they're ignorant, or they're like the New York Times and they're so snobby about religion that it's always on the back page because they just sort of are secularists who never think it means anything and should have gone the way of the dinosaur. And that's, of course, just wishful thinking. And so you have an ignorant group of people who are journalists in terms of religion. They come from a different milieu. Or you have people who are too snobby to go to the middle and find out what they're doing. Or you have people who literally are embarrassed to get into the subject, or you have folks who are just so caught up in the echo chamber of Washington, D.C., New York, and L.A. that they don't meet people like this and somehow don't believe they exist in big numbers or are serious. But, of course,
right,
the Tea Party should have been a wake-up call because these guys all came crawling out from under a rock and now they've taken over the Republican Party.
Well, not only that, but I mean, they've passed since November over 900 laws that are affecting women who have miscarriages,
exactly,
you know, contraception, abortion,
yeah,
everything.
Absolutely.
I mean, I would have thought that should have woken up the New York Times.
Well, it does. I mean, you get articles on the politics of it. It isn't that they don't cover these issues, but you don't get in-depth reporting except for a few people like Mark Oppenheimer, who's an excellent writer for The Times, who has a section called the Belief Section. He took over for Peter Steinfels. But with the exception of Mark Oppenheimer at The Times, I don't think there's one person in that organization who would have heard of any of these people.
I'm just wondering about Nicholas Kristof, with his book, his book that he wrote with his wife, Half the Sky. He'd be the perfect one to be writing about this.
Yeah, and I think there are people there who are aware, but again, I think they just give a big sigh and says, oh man, you know, I can't get into this stuff. And it is intolerable. I mean, look, I know just in writing Sex, Mom, and God and the other books I've written, like my memoir, Crazy for God, I can't move on fast enough. I mean, I've been writing about this stuff to warn people, but also just to get it off my chest and then move on and get back to writing novels, like my novels, Portofino, Saving Grandma, Zermatt, Baby Jack, and those other books, or even my books on military family relations, because frankly, this stuff is tiresome. And, you know, if you're a journalist and you've got to interview crazy people constantly, eventually you just get sick of it. And if you're trying to research the Reconstructionists and the Dominionists, you know, how much Gary North garbage and Rusess Rushdoony's Old Testament parsing, you know, book after book, page after page, how much of this stuff can you wade through? And so it's difficult terrain, but the problem is it's affected people like Rick Perry and Michelle Bachmann. And if you look at who was up on Rick Perry's platform with him at his prayer meeting and the church leaders who have endorsed him, they're nutcases. They're extremist Christian Zionists like John Hagee, who if he had his way would, you know, displace the entire population of Palestine. And, you know, I don't know where they're supposed to go, into the ocean or something, you know, to make way for Jesus' return for Israel on one hand. And then you've got hate groups, all these homophobic hate groups associated with Michelle Bachmann that love her. You know, you can't go further to the fringe than this. And it's time the mainstream media starts doing a little homework and really digging into what these guys are and who they are and where they're getting their ideas, crazy as they may be.
Well, let me ask you, is there anyone in progressive Christianity or moderate religion, you know, whether they're Muslim or Christian mm-hmm. or whatever, anyone trying to battle against these folks? I mean, they actually go against the Bible's teachings? I mean, can't we throw their own material up against them?
I was at a wonderful festival this summer. It was the first time it had been held, called the Wild Goose Festival. Nothing to do with geese. It's taken from Celtic Christianity, a term about mystical Christianity. And there were people there who, you know, were of a completely different opinion, progressive Christians, people from other religious traditions. There's a lot of those folks out there. But let's not fool ourselves. Big-time American religion of personality cults and the big-time political religion of evangelicalism as it impacts the Republican Party, and the big bucks in terms of what the big sellers are, you know, that are pushed by people like Rupert Murdoch, is all the right-wing stuff. And so, yes, there are a lot of individual progressive Christians, open-minded, decent, wonderful people, intelligent, just as there are in all religions. I know quite a few people. You know, folks like Jim Wallace have done good work through the Sojourners and other religious groups like that. But in terms of the dollars spent and the impact they have, it's minuscule compared to, you know, what Rupert Murdoch can do just by, you know, rolling over in bed. I mean, with $1 billion behind total religious nutcase flakes like Glenn Beck that he set up and gave a national megaphone to, although he's off the air now, or Sarah Palin, for that matter, that he gave her own program to. So that the problem is there's nobody on the progressive side that is giving reasonable religious people the same kind of megaphone and corporate backing that you have the religious right being given again and again and again and again by not just Fox News, but all these other huge corporate entities like News Corp, also owned by Rupert Murdoch, or the big evangelical publishing houses that are billion-dollar industries, the ones that he doesn't own, or the mega churches like John Hagee's church, this nutty Christian Zionist down in Houston. You know, this isn't a guy with 25 crazy followers. This is somebody with a 50,000-member church and a TV program.
What do you think, I mean, let's, you know, look forward a few years. If by some chance Obama can't get reelected because of the economy or Democrats don't come out to vote, whatever it is, what do we look like after 4 years into a Rick Perry administration or a Michelle Bachmann administration or Mitt Romney administration for that matter, because the Tea Party and all the Republicans are controlling so many Congresses across the country?
Yeah, it'll basically look like two things. It'll look like corporate America has completely taken over. In other words, there won't even be a pretense of democracy. It'll be exactly what the Supreme Court did when it ruled that corporations are people and can give unlimited money secretly to campaigns. In other words, game over as far as that type of thing goes for a long time to come until there's a genuine turnabout. And then on the religious side, these folks will be pushing us towards a soft version of evangelical type of theocracy when it comes to abortion, when it comes to stem cell research, when it comes to gay rights, when it comes to education, when it comes to funding, all these different things, medical stuff, they want to roll back Obamacare, et cetera, et cetera. These guys are going to be pushing us to their version of the place like Iran or Saudi Arabia. Now, it won't be as extreme because this is a big pluralistic country and they're not going to control everything, but that's the direction they'll try to take us in. So if you think there's been a sort of a death of 1,000 cuts on women's rights with the Tea Parties, all these pieces of legislation they're bringing at the state level, you just wait, because in a Rick Perry's America, the oil companies will have free reign. You know, women will have their rights attacked on everything from family rights of on divorce and relationships with men, marriage when it comes to gay marriage, et cetera, is going to be undone. And then when it comes to abortion, Roe, big effort will be made to roll Roe v. Wade back, probably with success, with one or two more Supreme Court appointments. And so I think genuinely the worst fears of the progressive movement will be realized. And those are the stakes. And I don't think I'm overstating it.
Well, and I don't either, quite frankly. I really don't. I thought maybe I was just being too cynical. Well, and also the idea of freedom of religion, too. I mean, a lot of my listeners are, you know, sort of eclectic in their spirituality.
Right.
You know, maybe some of them are pagans, some of them are progressive Christians. You know, they are looking for a feminine face of God out there in the world to empower women. Well, that runs totally counter. I mean, look how they were freaking out about, you know, the saying that the Japanese emperor was in cahoots with Amaterasu, so that's why
right.
the stock market crashed, and Lady Libertas in Colombia, and I don't know. In your opinion, wouldn't they be just as freaked out about people like us who, whether we look at the feminine face of God as an archetype or a deity, as they are the way they're making this outrageous, bogus war against Sharia law? Like,
yeah,
they really
and
have
course,
to be worried
while
about
ironically
it in this country.
Trying to impose their own version of Sharia in America by making openly saying that the Bible should be put above the law, that we ought to change our laws to fit what their interpretation of the biblical text is. They're very open about this. They say that the Bible should be the rule, the final arbiter of law in America, and if it's not in the Bible, or the Bible speaks against something, or something they say the Bible speaks against, whether it does or doesn't, which is a whole other question of who interprets these things, we would have our version of Iran. In other words, we would have our American version of biblical law instead of Quranic law being imposed on a much more secular main population, but that freakishly this primary process, which has put these radical right-wingers in charge of the Republican process, if because of a terrible economy and some fluky situation you got somebody like Rick Perry in the White House with a congressional majority, hey, you know, I wouldn't predict what's going to happen, but I know that two big threads would run through it. It would be open season on the environment. It would be complete corporate control of our national life. So you would have, you know, any sense of an egalitarian nation would be gone. It's already slipping away, but it would be gone. And on the side of this family values issue, they'd be including everything. In other words, there'd be a full-blown attack on public education, on the universities, on funding of education, and everything would be done to make both quote-unquote Christian schools and homeschooling the norm for anybody who wanted it, with all sorts of breaks to make that happen. And they would push a very ideological version of their whole family values. And one of the things I do in Sex, Mom, and God in the book is very clearly attack the root cause of these views. In other words, I don't just say, hey, this is what these political people do, tracing my own childhood growing up in a fundamentalist family and the kind of Bible stories I was raised on, many of which are just laced with misogyny from start to finish, that are taken for granted because it's sort of in the Bible, so it doesn't count or it's just religion. But, you know, when you unpack this stuff, speaking of the feminine face of God, it's really shocking. You know, you have stories in here and laws about women. You know, someone loses their virginity before they're married, they should be stoned to death in the gate of their father's house. As a woman who's menstruating has got to go off and sit in a tent for 7 days, and then she's unclean. And if anybody touches her, they've got to go through a ritual purification. The early church has all these insane canons carried into the Christian tradition of a woman being excommunicated if she has a miscarriage. She can't come to church for 40 days. You know, there is a bias against women built into Christianity in the very fabric of the Bible. And there's a lot of nice, well-meaning evangelicals who say, oh, well, that's just sort of a misinterpretation. You know, it's balanced by other things in the Bible. It isn't a misinterpretation. People like Paul meant exactly what they said, which was very essentially, sit down and shut up if you're a woman. Let men run things and don't speak. It says it very clearly in the New Testament, which is supposed to be the nice part of the Bible. And when you get into the Old Testament, it's absolutely insane. I mean, there's not a hair's difference between what the Taliban is doing in Afghanistan and what a quote-unquote Christian country would be like if these Reconstructionists ran it on the basis of the Old Testament. In other words, the Quran is absolutely no different when it comes to this stuff. So people should just wake up and understand these folks are serious. And the thinking that they're following, that, you know, comes out of people like Gary North is serious, and sure, they're all crazy. I mean, talking about return to the gold standard, that the IMF is a demonic plot, that the United Nations wants to take over the world. Sure, it's all crazy. But the problem is you have a huge group of people who believe this nonsense, just like they believe that President Obama wasn't born in America. So that
right.
was crazy, too. But look
right.
at the effect it had. It totally
right.
distracted the process for 2 years and undid his presidency.
Well, and I think so much of it really had to do with the fact that he was black. I think
yeah,
that's
absolutely.
What really
there's,
sent them into a tailspin.
Yeah, there's,
they thought,
a, you know, there's no understanding the Tea Party unless the word racism comes up. And they always say, oh, you can't play the race card. Well, why not? The question should be reversed, and that is, you know, when George W. Bush started $2 trillion wars at the same time, undeclared, and both bad ideas, where were you guys then on the deficit? Nowhere in sight. Why? Because he was a white, born-again Christian from Texas in the White House, and it fit your idea of the way this country ought to look, demographically. A black gets into the White House, nothing changes in terms of the financial situation, and everybody's up in arms saying, oh, no, it's nothing to do with race or creed or anything. It's just we're worried about the economy. Yeah, right. Sure, that's all it is. And that's why, you know, we've had to have all these years of lies about birther stuff, lies about death panels, just insanity directed at this black American.
Well, you've only confirmed my worst fears, Frank, and I've probably kept you a few minutes longer than you had. So unless you'd like to add something,
well,
I don't want to make you
just,
late for
yeah,
where you want to go.
I got to run here, but you know, I'd just like to finish by just saying this. Look, you know, the reason I take the time in my book to actually go after what I call the Bronze Age mythology at the heart of evangelical Christianity, which is the Old Testament and the New Testament to a large extent, if you want to say Roman era mythology, is because in the final analysis, there's no point being respectful to reactionary religion in any form, whether it's Christianity, Islam, or anything else. We have to tell the truth, and that is these people are the enemies of humanity, finally, because they are against the march of progress. They are against science. They deny all these things, whether it's global warming or the fact that gay people are born that way. They don't want to know the facts. They're not interested in what the latest study says. In fact, they feel threatened by it. And so I really think that, you know, what I do in Sex, Mom, and God is, you're saying, well, what should other people do, the president and so forth, is what everybody ought to be doing. And that is, look, tell the truth about the fact that these people are not interested in truth. They're interested in their version of faith being imposed on the truth, and if something has to give, then what gives is the facts, and it has to continuously give room for, you know, what is in essence Bronze Age mythology being rammed down our throats. And that's what this agenda of people like Rick Perry and Michelle Bachmann is about.
So do you get any threats from these people, Frank, for
well,
trying
I get
to
nasty,
expose them?
I get plenty of nasty email, and I hear from people like this, and, you know, it's very obvious that it's a dangerous bunch of people. Generally, what happens is I'm ignored until someone like Rush Limbaugh or Glenn Beck or someone on Fox News goes after me, and then for about 3 days I get a lot of very moronic stuff. And, you know, it's an interesting insight into who their audience is, that when you get mentioned on some of these big right-wing blogs or you get mentioned on one of their shows, it's really like the scum comes up from the bottom of the pond. And I don't refer to everybody who disagrees with me as scum. Don't get anything, you know, an idea like that. I get plenty of reasonable people disagreeing with me, and I answer my email. But I'm talking about the misspelled, you know, profanity-laced insanity that in one, you know, in the same sort of thing they say about the president. You know, one line calls you a communist, and the next line, you know, a Muslim or a satanic. I mean, completely contradictory nonsense off the wall. You know, and so from that point of view, it's frightening, not so much just personally, but just that this is out there, and that these folks are listening to people like Hannity and Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh, and that, you know, anytime you get mentioned on there, you know, you get this little avalanche for a couple of days until their attention span goes somewhere else, a vituperative sort of things. And that's concerning because it means that, you know, essentially they're stormtroopers out there ready to do the bidding of these nutcase commentators who then take no responsibility for what they unleash on us, whether it's an abortion provider being murdered after he's called Tiller the killer 30 times on Fox, or whether it's somebody flying a plane into an IRS building loaded with gasoline and killing an innocent person to make a point about not paying taxes. You know, there's a violent undertone on the religious right that of course nobody wants to talk about or admit is there, but it's very, very real.
So, Frank, last question, and I'll let you go here. I know this is a tired subject for you, because you've had
sure.
to rehash it so long, and you'd rather go on to other things. But it's so vital that the people in the country know about this. I mean,
right.
have you tried to actively get on, like, Rachel Maddow, Keith Olbermann,
Ed
Schultz?
Well, yeah, I have been on. I've been invited on Rachel Maddow a number of times, and I don't think I've been on the Keith Olbermann's program. But I do some media commentating, and I'm out and around, especially when I get a new book out like this one, Sex, Mom, and God. Book TV, C-SPAN taped a program of mine that I did this week, and it should be on in a couple of weeks here and there. But I must say, you know, the mainstream media doesn't really want to hear what I have to say. And so, yeah, there are shows like Rachel Maddow and these other programs on MSNBC and a few other outlets, television and radio as well, Democracy Now!, other places like that that I'm on fairly often. But, in terms of sitting down on the Today Show and laying it out, you know, this message is not welcome in the mainstream media. It's too forthright, and so everything has to be parsed and dressed up, and somehow we got to pretend this isn't really happening.
Well, I know what you're talking about. I mean, it's the same thing with women's rights. Nobody wants to talk about,
right.
you know, the issues with women. You know, you can't even say the word patriarchy because then somehow you're this, you know, angry lesbian feminist, you know,
exactly.
who, we have to be afraid of. I get what you're saying. Well, Frank, thank you so much.
Hey,
it's always my pleasure,
and I know I told you at the top of the hour I had to run off in a half an hour, but it's always too much fun talking to you. So you
well,
lured me along,
you.
And I'll just have to be late for the next thing I'm supposed to do.
Well, thank you for your tenacity, Frank.
Yeah.
We need you out there tonight.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
And good luck with the book. Well, listeners, this, in case you're just tuning in, this is Karen Tate, hostess of Voices of the Sacred Feminine, where we discuss Goddess, the Divine Feminine, and the resurging interest in right brain thinking and the feminine consciousness, whether the great she be deity, archetype, or ideal, and how these new values and benchmarks can save the world. And you've been listening to Frank Schaefer, trying to help us understand the mentality of the Tea Party and the religious right, whose ideology seems so at odds with Jesus and the message that he spoke. And if you didn't know it before, maybe you get it now, that there's really something afoot in this country, and we are on the verge of going in a really bad direction. So if you're like me, you know, if you're one of these people who really gets frustrated with the Democrats, gets frustrated with President Obama because he hasn't done enough, because he seems weak, because he seems neutered, this is the reality. This is what can come to pass if Democrats don't get out and vote and put Obama back into office. I want to go ahead and take a few minutes to make a few announcements and share something with you that I didn't share at the top of the hour because Frank was on a tight time schedule. The first thing I hope you'll stay with me, and I'm going to close the show with some nice music tonight. But the first thing I wanted to share was something, you know, it's kind of fun, but at the same time, it's one of those things that you say to yourself, gee, you know, I should be laughing, but, I really want to cry. Addictinginfo.org, that's a website, addictinginfo.org, had this list called 102 Things Not to Do If You Hate Taxes. And I thought this was just so right on. I wanted to share it with you. And it goes like this. So, you're a Republican or a Tea Partier that hates taxes. Well, since you don't like taxes or government, please kindly do the following. Do not use Medicare. Do not use Social Security. Do not become a member of the U.S. military who are paid with tax dollars. Don't ask the National Guard to help you after a disaster. Don't call 911 when you get hurt. Don't call the police to stop intruders in your home. Don't summon the fire department to save your burning home. Don't drive on any paved road, highway, or interstate, or drive on any bridge. Don't use public restrooms. Don't send your kids to public schools. Don't put your trash out for the city garbage collectors. Don't live in areas is with clean air. Don't drink clean water. Don't visit national parks. Don't visit public museums, zoos, and monuments. Don't eat or use FDA-inspected food and medicines. Don't bring your kids to public playgrounds. Don't run or walk on sidewalks. Don't use public recreational facilities such as basketball or tennis courts. Do not seek shelter facilities or food and soup kitchens when you are homeless and hungry. Don't apply for educational or job training assistance when you lose your job. Don't apply for food stamps when you can't feed your kids. Don't use the judiciary system for any reason. Don't ask for an attorney when you're arrested, and don't ask for one to be assigned to you by the court. Don't apply for any Pell grants. Don't use cures that were discovered by labs using federal dollars. Don't fly on federally regulated airplanes. Don't use any product that can trace its development back to NASA. Don't watch the weather provided by the National Weather Service. Do not listen or to severe weather warnings from the National Weather Service. Don't listen to tsunami, hurricane, or earthquake alert systems. Don't apply for federal housing. Don't use the Internet, which was developed by the military. Don't swim in clean rivers. Don't allow your child to eat school lunches or breakfast. Don't ask for FEMA assistance when everything you own gets wiped out by disaster. Okay, that was only 36, and it goes on and on, because there is actually 101. I'll just jump to the last five. Don't complain when diseases and viruses that were once fought around the globe by the U.S. government and the CDC reach your house. Don't work for any company required to pay its workers a livable wage, provide them sick days, vacation days, and benefits. Don't expect to be able to vote on election days. Government provides voting booths, election day officials, and voting machines, which are paid for with taxes. Don't ride trains. The railroad was built with government financial assistance. The fact is, we pay for the lifestyle we expect. Without taxes, our lifestyle would be totally different and much harder. America would be a third world country. The less we pay, the less we get in return. Americans pay less tax today since 1958 and is ranked 32nd out of 34 of the top tax-paying countries. Chile and Mexico are 33 and 34. The Republicans are lying when they say that we pay the highest taxes in the world and are only attacking taxes to reward corporations and the wealthy and to weaken our infrastructure and way of life. So next time you object to paying taxes or fight to abolish taxes for corporations and the wealthy, keep this quote in mind. It's by Oliver Wendell Holmes. I like to pay taxes. With them, I buy civilization. Good point. Good point. So thank you for listening to that, and I just have a couple more announcements that I want to share with you. First, if you're in the Southern California area and maybe you haven't listened to the show recently, I want to encourage you to save the date. And what date do I mean? Well, the date is every fourth Sunday of the month, because Sacred Sundays have started at the Green Man in Hollywood after our being on hiatus for a while. And the feedback we've been getting is people are liking it. They're glad we're doing it again. So the next service is September 25th. It's very eclectic. It honors the divine feminine and sacred masculine, and we talk about other topics as well. This coming service is going to be about dreaming and inspiration, and we're going to focus on the goddess from Malta, the sleeping goddess that was found in the hypogeum. There's singing and sharing and wisdom telling, just a great way to connect with the community and carve out some sacred space for yourself once a month. So check out my webpage, KarenTate.com. You can go to the Sacred Sundays button there. It'll take you to more details. You'll see who the priestesses are. You'll get the address. Nobody turned away for lack of funds. And I'm one of the Sacred Feminine Priestesses facilitating the service each month, so come out and say hello. Also, if you don't know it, please be aware of this. The occupation of Washington is starting October 6th. Yes? The occupation of Washington is starting October 6th. It's called Stop the Machine, Create a New World. You can find out more about it at October2011.org. Here's the call to action. Join the October 2011 Coalition, groups who advocate for peace and social, economic, and environmental justice, and a in a sustained occupation, and nonviolent resistance to stop the machine, create a new world. What is the machine? Well, it's corporatism and militarism. I think I'd like to add to that evangelical dominionists and reconstructionists. And what new world is possible? Well, one in which people's needs are more important than corporate profits, in which we unite our struggles for jobs, education, housing, healthcare, and human rights, in which we are free to implement solutions for a peaceful, just, and sustainable world. So please visit October2011.org, learn more about it, take the pledge, spread the word. If you can come and be there, please come. If you can't, help by telling your friends about it, post it on your Facebook page, your Yahoo groups. You know, maybe do some attunement in your own city. It doesn't have to be public if you can't do it public, although that would be better. Do some attunement, you know, in solidarity. And speaking of solidarity, today a press release came out announcing the solidarity of the Egyptian Spring with October2011.org. And you know what? That was good news. People everywhere are waking up. Even if our Congress, run by Republicans, have no plans to investigate Rupert Murdoch's alleged hacking in the United States, and the GOP, I don't know if you've heard this, this is brand new news, the GOP is now trying to rig the Electoral College. So people, you know, we are really at a crossroads here. History is knocking. You know, we just can't be complacent and empathetic, and we will only hurt ourselves if we don't go out and vote for President Obama because we feel like he hasn't done enough, because it will come back and bite us in the butt, and we will have a country like we don't even recognize. It will be bad news for women, gays, immigrants. It will be bad news for anybody who's not rich and white, and a male. So anyway, that brings my announcements tonight to a close. Sorry, I feel like I had to rush with Frank and have to sort of just take a moment here. I think I'd like to close the show tonight with what has sort of become our mission statement. Sort of an uplift after, you know, that sort of a somber news that Frank had to share. But you know what? Forewarned is forearmed. Very important. So I'll close tonight with, the mission statement for the show. As many of you know, adversaries of the sacred feminine tried to sweep away awareness and knowledge of her for all time. And with that sweeping away, when the great she was made to disappear because of the religion of patriarchy, of selfish and disconnected men and their war gods, women and their power, their leadership, their spiritual authority were thwarted, repressed, became taboo, diminished, and disrespected. That's why here on the show, I am dedicated to recovering the great she, whether she be deity, archetype, or ideal. Yes, we intend to defy, to taste the forbidden fruit, to be powerful and uppity women, to throw off the shackles and look in under every rock, behind every locked door, peer into the abyss of the past so we know why things are the way they are. We aren't going to be barefoot and pregnant. We aren't going to let men treat us as if we are here to serve them. Those days are gone. We are not going to let the Bronze Age mentality of Reconstructionist, Dominionist, Fundamentalist Evangelicals rule the day. You know, I think if you go look at my YouTube channel, you will see a paper I gave to the American Academy of Religion. I talked about the ideals of the sacred feminine and why the ideals of the sacred feminine are more in alignment with progressives, liberals, and real Democrats. And I stress real Democrats, not blue dogs, not these ones who take way too much money from corporations and just as well be Republicans. No, not them. I'm talking about the real Democrats. I make a really good case for it, and that's the ideals that we're striving for in this country. We're striving for balance, harmony, wholeness, equality, peace, sanity, and you know what? Those are the ideals of the sacred feminine that can move us forward in a good way, not this way that we see, it could be our future. So It's women like me and you out there, armed with our like-minded brothers. These ideas of the sacred feminine and secular law, a democratic socialism where we take care of each other. It's not this Ayn Rand individualism. You know, that, I believe that's the kind of country we want to live in, not where, you know, if you don't have enough money, you die, or if you get too old, well, you have to go live under a bridge, or heaven forbid, a lot of people have been, you know, using the metaphor Soylent Green. You know, if you don't have enough money, well, you're worthless. You're a parasite. That's what Ayn Rand says, and that's what so many of the Republicans believe. But that's not the kind of world we want to live in. That's not the world of the sacred feminine. So we want to set things back on course. So let me repeat what, you know, two of these sayings that also lend themselves to these ideas. The first is a quote by the 19th century German philosopher Arthur Schopenhauer. He said, "All truth passes through three stages. First, it's ridiculed. Second, it's violently opposed. And third, it is accepted for being self-evident." Well, that's how I feel about these ideas of the sacred feminine. They had been swept under the rug for so long, nobody even knew about them. And you know what? As more and more people understand what the values of the sacred feminine are, you know, they get on board. Because you know what? They never wanted to let their mother go anyway. You know, they just renamed her. And Gandhi, well, Gandhi said, "First they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win." Well, that's what we have to do, people. We have to find the tenacity and perseverance of Sekhmet, the social justice of Kali, and, you know, we have to get to work to make this the kind of world we want it to be. So, with that, I will say good night. And I will invite you to be with me next week. Next Wednesday, I have on the show as my first guest, Karen Berg. If you don't know her name, she's one of the foundresses of the Kabbalah Center. And she wrote a book, God Wears Lipstick. And we're going to be talking about the parallels between Kabbalah and goddess spirituality. It's very interesting. I've been studying Kabbalah this year, and they actually believe that women are more spiritually evolved than men. Lots of other things we're going to get into, I think, you know, you'll be interested in. They talk about sharing. They talk about having gratitude. In fact, they believe that if you don't share, that if you don't desire for other people, not just for the self alone, that you will actually contract disease, whether it's dis-ease or disease. So their whole idea is, if we lived in a world where, yes, we desire more and more, but we desire it not for ourselves, we desire it to share so that we can, you know, help improve the lives of others beyond our family, that what a world that would be, wouldn't it, though? This is so in sync with what I believe ideals of the sacred feminine are. So it's been a really nice fit to be studying Kabbalah alongside goddess spirituality. And after Karen Berg is on the show, Anne Niven will be with us. You may know Anne. She founded a lot of the goddess publications like Sage Woman. She's going to be with us, and we're going to talk about the new trends in goddess publishing. And then the next day, on a special day and time, on Thursday the 22nd, I'm going to have on the show Patricia Corey. She's going to be calling in from Europe. I think she's in Italy. She is the next Amseti. She, and if you know who Amseti was, Amseti was a woman from Britain. She only died in the 80s, so she is, I guess, I would consider her someone from contemporary times, not today, but a couple decades ago. She had a near-death experience, and when she came out of that, she remembered past lives living in ancient Egypt. Now, she wasn't a crackpot. A lot of the top archaeologists events of the day, really spoke to her and respected her and listened to what she had to say. She spent most of her life in Egypt. She worshipped the old gods. And a wonderful book out there by Jonathan Cott called In Search of Amseti, one of my favorite books. I'd highly recommend it. But Amseti has passed away in the 80s. She left this world, and now no doubt she is sitting in the arms of the mother of Isis and Osiris. And so Patricia Corey has had a similar experience. She had a near-death experience, and when she came out of it, she too had found a new connection that opened herself up to new consciousness and new ideas, and in all regarding Egypt. So we're going to be talking about that on the 22nd. So next week, the show is Wednesday and Thursday, and then the following week, I'm going to have Alan Butler on the show, again, a special day and time, Monday the 26th. He wrote the book about the sacred feminine in Washington. So we're going to be talking about all of the aspects of the sacred feminine that permeate Washington, D.C. So, that being said, I will thank you for being with me tonight. I'm going to close the show with a nice song that I don't always get a chance to play. I'm going to let you hear the final Delphic Oracle by Lane Redman. So please enjoy this for the next 7 minutes if you'd like to stay tuned in. And please tune in next week. And I hope you will go to my show page and indicate that you're a friend by clicking that button. Also click the follow button so that you get notice of each new show every week. And leave a comment, please. I really appreciate your comments and input, or you can always email me. So for the next 7 minutes, this is Lane Redman's final Delphic Oracle. Good night, listeners. And if you're in Southern California on Sunday, please come and see me at the Pagan Pride Day. I'm going to be out there in El Monte. I'm giving a talk at 2 o'clock on Ideals of the Sacred Feminine, and I'll be signing books from 3 to 4. So that's the last announcement I have tonight, and now, finally, I'll be quiet, and you can listen to Lane Redman's final Delphic Oracle, I promise, this time. Good night, listeners. Have a good week.
Above all things, speak the truth. Do nothing to excess. Accept the gifts the gods have given you. Choose not the advice of others. Make your own nature your guide in life. Yeah. of the king. The well-crafted temple has fallen to pieces. Apollo dwells here no more. There is no more oracular laurel. No talking spring. And the voice of the water has been silenced. All is finished. Will be heard again. Know thyself.